All right. Okay. All right. So, Frank, welcome to our video session this evening. I really like doing these each week. It is something that I actually look forward to. And so, diving into this, in week two, we're looking at the types of ballistics and how that works. And there's also discussion on different types of shells and those components. So, you had asked prior to starting the recording a question on. The question about shot shell and shot shell length. Can you repeat that question?
So we have so many fiches that we are stuffing into the shot shell, but you're saying you can only get 28 out of 40 or 37 into the shell itself. So I was curious if it's the shell is not long enough.
Okay. So when you are looking at your shot shell, right, your 2 3/4 inch shot shell is actually loaded is 2.5 inches. Because when it expands and it opens up, right, the petals that open up are 1/4 of an inch. So 2 3/4 is a measurement of it being open, not closed. So a loaded 2 3/4 inch shot shell is going to be 2.5 inches long. Would you like to see an example?
Sure.
All right. All right. So this is a loaded shot shell. You can see how the petals are closed. Now, this one happens to be an 8-petal crimp. The two types of petal crimp is a 6-petal and an 8-petal. And that's going to depend upon the shell itself.
Okay.
The other type you'll run into is a roll crimp. On a roll crimp, the plastic hull is rolled onto itself, and that's what creates the proper tension, right?
Okay.
So whether it's a roll crimp or a star crimp is going to be determined by the recipe, the load data that you're using. Both of those are critical to ensuring that you have the right pressure inside the case for it to perform the way it's supposed to. Okay?
Okay, at that.
All right. So, like I said, 2 3/4 inch. And here is 2 3/4 inch.
Okay.
It's exactly the same. The difference is that when these petals open, it adds another 1/4 inch to the length of the case. So, a 2 3/4 inch chamber is really designed to take 2.5 inch shells. Now, here's the kicker. If a 2.5 inch shell is actually a 2 3/4 inch, what is the unfired length of a 3 inch shot shell?
2 3/4 inches.
Exactly. So a 3-inch shot shell will fit perfectly into a 2 3/4 inch chamber, but will become an overpressure situation because the petals can't open because they're into the throat of the chamber and they can't expand enough to let the shot column and the wad and everything through it, which is when you breach the barrel and cause catastrophic injury to the gun, potential catastrophic injury to the shooter. So you always want to keep your 2 3/4 inch guns as far away as possible from your 3-inch shot shell because you don't want them to get mixed. Okay.
The stuff I'm learning around here.
Now, if we're talking about SHOT Show specifically, what were the original color codes for SHOT Show hulls?
don't think I missed that. I don't remember that right now off the top of my head. Wait, I got this right here. What was the original color size?
What was the original color code for SHOT Show hulls? Because a SHOT Show, it's not a SHOT Show case, it's considered a SHOT Show hull. The hull does exactly the same thing as a case. It contains the powder, your projectile, and all that kind of stuff. It's just different nomenclature.
I know I must have skimmed read that, but I know I'm reading this. Primer pocket, I read this flash hole. I really am overreading this.
Okay, so let me help you out.
Please.
The original color code for 12 gauge was all 12 gauge SHOT Show had red hulls. Okay,
Okay.
so all 12 gauge SHOT Show, right? The hulls were red.
Okay.
Now, all 20 gauge were yellow. All 16 gauge were purple. And 28 gauge was orange. So why was that important? Why was it important to know those original color codes?
But depending on what size chamber your shotgun is, and you grab the wrong ammunition, that, as you explained earlier, you're not going to have the right headspace, and it's going to not have enough pressure, and you're going to have some type of catastrophic injury.
Yeah, or rapid disassembly of the firearm is someone described it in one of the classes. So here's the deal, is that a 20 gauge SHOT Show will drop past the forcing cone and into the barrel of a 12 gauge shotgun. So if I grab the wrong shell, I could drop a 20 gauge shell into my 12 gauge and then load a 12 gauge shell behind the 20 gauge that's inside the chamber already. So the reason it was color coded is so that Jimmy on the farm, that 10-year-old that's operating the tractor and is worried about Jake the snake, right, knows that if he's at a 12 gauge, he needs a red hull. If he's got a 20 gauge, he needs a yellow
Purple.
hull. If he's got a 16 gauge, it needs to be a purple hull, right? No, those are the original color codes. We have gotten all the way outside of that six ways of Sunday, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a different one. I got several that's like doesn't make the same colors, but they're all 12 gauge, but it's just different colors. They red, blue, green, black.
Well, so what I do when I load SHOT Show, I load SHOT Show by color. So, like any of the blue 12 gauge hulls that I happen to come across when I'm loading, those I only use for slugs. So I know that if I grab a box and it's blue, that is going to be a 525 grain lead slug. I don't need to use that for, the deer. I mean the birds, Bambi maybe the bear, but definitely not the dove. Right? Now, I do competitive shooting on sporting clays and trap. Well, for sporting clays and trap, I run a mixture of number 8 and number 9 shot. So all of those, because I'm a big supporter of breast cancer awareness, I am a brassiere. I like to support them. I actually purchase the pink SHOT Shell so that I can reload the pink SHOT Shell because nobody else is going to pick up the pink SHOT Shell because nobody wants to admit that they bought the pink SHOT Shell. So every time I go to the range, I'm doing my competition. I know which hulls are mine. I pick them up. I got them. I'm ready to load them. Nobody else is going to mess with them. It's all good. I know that anytime I see a box of pink shot shell, it is going to be a mixture of number 8 and number 9 shot. Right? That's my loading philosophy. Is it the only loading philosophy? No. But does it work in regards to data and being mindful of what it is I'm putting into my gun? Yes, right?
And that's what I was thinking. That's a good note. That's a good note to use.
and that's what it comes down to. Since we're not following the standard color codes, as gunsmiths, we need to know the original color codes so that we can communicate them to our customer. We need to explain to them the differences between a 2 3/4 inch chamber and a 3 inch chamber and what that really looks like in regards to the size shot shell that's going into the gun, right? And then we need to make sure that they understand that if they are going to load their shot shell, they need to come up with some philosophy of organization, something that and how they're going to keep the shot shell organized effectively to be able to grab what they want when they need it without any issue. So did the length matter on those cliche? The answer is no. The challenge was how the cliches went in with the tailpiece that you know. So you got this tailpiece on the end of the spike, right? Well, that's upside down, right side up, upside down, right side up, right side up. You know, it ends up getting all kind of wonky, and then you have to reshape it. Hey, Lee, how are you?
Doing well, sir. How are you?
I am fantastic. You sent me pictures. That looked like a successful trip.
Yes, I got shot at 3, got 2. The last 2, there was one showed up just after I shot the second one. And between the adrenaline and heart racing and everything else, yeah, I shot wild. There was no trace that I hit anything. But I got 33 pounds of meat, and we kept the bones, made bone stock, and it was good.
Nice. Well, Lee, Frank, who's in the session with us, is in week 2 of ballistics and ammunition.
Okay.
And Lee, I'll let you introduce yourself a little bit, and then Frank, you can introduce yourself. While y'all are doing that, I'm gonna grab some stuff from the shelf that I want to show you.
Okay, awesome. Let's see. I got it. Yeah. All right. There's nothing here. How you doing, sir? Lee, I've actually. Let's see.
You're in week 6 or week 2?
Hey, I'm sorry, sir.
Are you in week 6 or are you in week 2?
Oh no, sir. I'm actually not in this. Not in his class at all.
Oh,
I was
he completed it a couple of sessions ago.
Yes.
Well, you're a fan. I understand. I get it.
I've been coming back and stalking his video sessions fairly regularly as I can, but he's been a phenomenal coach, mentor, and a wealth of knowledge. And I continue to reach out to him whenever I've got questions or just to show, as he said, just to show off some life successes. So,
yeah.
Congratulations to you. I'm thankful for your support here too, because he's given me a lot of good knowledge, but I was like, oh, I'm the only one here.
There have been what, 2 or 3 times where it's just been you and I, sir?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And those are some of the best ones because it's just you. So,
we don't follow a specific path on any of our discussions. So, you know, I have done these sessions where they have been 2 hours in length, and I've done them where they've been 45 minutes, you know, so they keep us pretty busy. All right. So we were talking about cliches.
Okay.
See if I can. All right. So you can see the tail fins on that, right?
Right.
Well, when you have the tail fins on one and you have the tail fins on the other, what you end up having to do is stack them this way, right? And if I'm going to drop that into a hull, Let me grab a water cup. Hold on. So I grabbed a couple of different wad cups. So this is one wad cup. Now you notice how you have kind of that shock absorber.
Yep.
Section. Remember I told you the pedals were important in regards to the tension.
Yep.
Or the crimp. Here's the deal. Is it when the powder ignites, the powder's down here, right? It burns, it ignites, it creates pressure. That pressure causes this center section to actually compress. I don't know that I can get it, but it compresses as it's accelerating, right? So that crimp that you have on top actually ensures that you have the delay necessary for this to begin accelerating with the powder burn to then open up the pedals to then travel down the barrel, right? And having that spring in there allows it to accelerate as a unit, so it all catches up, because you have all of this powder burning down here that has to accelerate an ounce and an eighth. Well, that's heavy, and so it's going to take a little bit of time. If I just bang and it goes out, I end up flattening some of the pellets because of pressure. If I use this, it compresses, which allows it to increase in speed until it travels out. And then when it travels out, comes out the end, then these open up because they're spring loaded. So when it goes through the choke compresses it. And then when it comes out, it goes bang. And then this catches the wind, these fold back, and that lets the shot column travel forward.
I get it. That's...
Okay. Now, this is specifically for an ounce and eighth of shot. So number 8, number 9, number 7, number 6, number 12, it doesn't matter. An ounce and an eighth, because of the way it measures, is volumetrically. It will always deliver an ounce and an eighth. Now, the only time that varies is when you're talking about double aught or triple aught or quadruple aught buck. In those cases, you're hand dropping those into your wad cup, into the hull that you're then doing your roll crimp on or whatever the crimp is, because those don't feed volumetrically through the actual machine itself. Now, all right. So, can you see that card?
Yes. So that you
there. Okay.
Yes.
So that is a piece of cardboard. It's a cardboard disc that is actually sitting on top of the powder charge, on top of the live primer. Okay. That's your hull.
Okay.
This is the wad cup.
Okay.
Now, notice on this one, it doesn't have an acceleration spring. Right?
Right.
And the reason is that this is only being used to accelerate steel darts that aren't going to deform. So you drop your steel darts in here until you get whatever we're talking about 37, right? Not going to happen. 28, we're kind of maxed out, right? But so those drop in, and then that's going to go into here. And then, hang on, I can actually show you. Oh, here we go. All right, so the way these were loaded, right, is I counted out the number and I made sure that the total weight was an ounce and an eighth.
Okay.
Now, some of that actually includes your wad cup. All right.
Okay.
Now, we've got our hull with our card. And this is going to drop in.
Okay.
So there's your payload. This plastic disc,
Let's see it.
sits on top, and then this is roll crimped with a drill press. And so this plastic, the smooth plastic, rolls over and then pushes down onto that plastic disc, creating that tension. And bada bing, bada bang, you got a 12 gauge flache shell.
So that's an ounce and an eighth payload, and that's about 28 flaches in there.
20,
So
28, 29, 1 inch steel dots, darts.
does the payload affect the foot per second, the trajectory, the distance? Like,
Remember, with a shot shell, all of those pressures, all of those numbers are divided across whatever the payload is, right? So if we go back to, let me share the, oh, I took off the calculator. Let me bring the calculator back up. Right, so where did it go? No, I wanted to share my calculator. Stop sharing. Not the whole screen. Calculator. Share. Ha! All right, so let's go back with our 20,000 PSI shot shell, right? So we have 20,000 and we have 29 pellets in there. You know what? Let's make the math easy. Let's say 30. Fair enough.
Yeah, that's easy to go with.
All right. So at 30 flache, that means each flache is traveling with 666.666666666666. PSI.
That's for each one. I got it.
For each one, because the energy of the shell gets divided across the payload, right? So in that same case, 20,000 PSI. If I only have one projectile divided by one equals,
20,000. So it's going to be the
okay,
full.
so that means that 525 grain Benjamin 12 gauge air pellet that I cast and load is delivering all 20,000 PSI when it hits, because there's only one projectile.
Poor dove.
Oh, I'm not, yeah. I mean, I've seen that 525 grain fold plate steel, so.
Yeah, I imagine that dolphin sad story. Wow, okay. That's where makes me I was reading from last week's material, and with the charts for BC calculation for like a 9 millimeter compared to a 5.56, it seems like the ratio, the BC, what is that chart was saying? It seemed like they're about the same
Talking about
energy.
the, are you talking about the ballistic coefficient?
Yes. And
So
it, when I was looking at that chart, it looked like they are about the, yep, here it is. 9 millimeter weight grain, weight in grains, 115 grains. The ballistic coefficient is 0.158. I'm mistaken that. I read something wrong again. Nah, that is way better. It's way higher at least. Never mind what I was going to say.
No, seriously, man. You know, Frank, there is so much information that don't ever apologize for finding out that you were wrong, right? Because how else do we learn, right? We learn from mistakes. Mistakes are not bad, right? Now, sometimes they have really bad outcomes, but the mistake itself was not bad. You know, but what you know, when you think about providing knowledge or information to a customer as a gunsmith, you know, it's good to be able to say, hey, I made this mistake. You know, I was confused on when we're talking about ballistic coefficient, we're talking about energy, and we're talking about thermal performance, and we're talking about transitional performance. You know, I was confused on the difference between 115, 124, and 147 grain 9 millimeter. So let me share what my mistake developed. Now, what have you just done? As a smith, you've made yourself human. You've made yourself a resource because they know it, you're going to find the answer, right? And you've made them not feel like an absolute idiot. So
I see why Lee comes over here. I see why Lee comes here. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it's okay to be confused. It's okay to get the information wrong, because that gives us a chance to come back through and find where those data points were to make our knowledge better. Right. You know, when you talk about firearm, incidences, so, you know, negligent injuries, right, or, you know, negligent discharges. There are two causes of firearm, we'll call them accidents, right? I don't like to say accidents because an accident is something outside of someone's control. And if the gun goes bang when it's not supposed to, that is 100% within their control. But for the sake of this discussion, let's say firearm accidents, right? There are two causes. Number one, carelessness, right? Meaning I knew better and I did it anyway, right? And then the second one is ignorance, meaning I didn't know because I didn't have the knowledge and now I need to get the knowledge, right? Call me ignorant every day of the week and I'm okay with that. Call me careless, those are fighting words. Because if you call me careless, that means that you're telling me that I am not responsible enough to ensure that I am doing what I need to be doing every single step of every single day of every single firearm manipulation, right? Do I know every gun? No. That's ignorance. I can fix ignorant. I can't fix careless, right? And the only time I've ever kicked anybody out of a live firearms class is for carelessness.
Thank you for your service.
Oh, definitely.
I realized what I was trying to say earlier is when I was looking at the weighting grains for that 9 millimeter compared to the 5.56, and I see that it's heavier than the 5.56, but that ballistic coefficient, and I look at the shape, and comparing that 9 millimeter, this no. Like I see how this one is designed to travel. The form factor is smaller point, less weight, so it's going to have more energy behind it compared to this 9. And I keep getting out at the camera, but yeah.
No, it's okay. I understand.
And it makes sense it makes a lot of sense just now, as you explained with the shot shell too, with the energy that's behind each fliché that is spread out over that compared to this is, all the energy is in this one projectile. It's not 28 of those projectiles, or 30 projectiles.
Yeah, if that projectile generates 50,000 PSI, if that case generates 50,000 PSI, that projectile receives 50,000 PSI. Now, as it travels, that's going to bleed off, right? And that energy is going to go away. And a lighter projectile will always lose energy faster than a heavier projectile, right? So the trade-off here is do I want a fast, flat-shooting projectile that I may not get the same terminal performance out of at distance, right? Or do I want a heavier, slower moving projectile that maintains its kinetic energy longer to ultimately deliver harder terminal performance when it gets to the target at the end, right? If you look at most shooters that we run into, the only measurement that they have, or the only two measurements that they have to say this is a good round, is how fast does it go and can I put the holes close together? Okay? Neither of those are really scientific, right? Because velocity has nothing ultimately to do with the performance of the cartridge. Velocity simply says, this is how fast it's leaving my muzzle. Now, I want to know my weight because now I'm going to see my drop off. If it's heavier, I'm going to see my kinetic energy, right? But truth be told is I don't care how fast it leaves the gun. As long as it leaves the gun the way it's supposed to, I'm good with that, right? Because I can manipulate everything else through my load and refinement and all that kind of stuff to get it where I want it to be, which is why if you reload or remanufacture, it is 100% feasible, possible, and appropriate for you to understand that you can produce, even with minimal knowledge, you can produce an infinitely more accurate round than anything you will ever buy off the shelf that says bench rest accuracy, most golly jizz wing bang for your buck, gonna always hit the target, you know, precision ammunition. Because the ammunition manufacturers are still making a million rounds a month. How is that specific to precision? It ain't. There's no way. You can't have just a standard deviation alone from cartridge one to cartridge 1 million is so astronomically broad, it's impossible to ensure that it's always the same. Plus, the ammunition manufacturer cares about one thing and one thing only. Does it fit in the gun? Because every round they produce must fit in a 9mm or must fit in a 308 or must fit in, you know, a 5.56.
That ties into what you were saying earlier, that you saying how ammunition companies and firearm companies are in cahoots. And that made me think about like Remington, Winchester, Smith & Wesson. These are popular firearm manufacturers, but they also make their own specialty ammunition. And you know, in the early days with the wars, the reason why these firearm manufacturers came along and they got the military government contracts that increased the popularity for their ammunition. But right now, I believe I read something about Sig Sauer. They got a 5.7, new type. These same firearm manufacturers are still producing ammunition specific for their types of firearms. And like you're saying, reloading, these 9mm are been around for a while. Everybody got a 9mm, or if they got an AR, it's a 223, 5.56, 3.0, whatever. It's kind of popular ammunition that's been around for a while. I agree. It makes sense. That's why I'm enjoying to learn what I'm learning in this class. Like, why do I need to go to the store? Recently, I spoke with somebody about ammunition for this firearm that I bought, and I was just asking their recommendation on the ammunition that I should use for this firearm. And the only thing they recommend is
what is the gun?
Oh, I got a cool Kel-Tec sub 2K, and I was just checking it out.
Okay.
So you know what those are?
Yes,
the
I do.
Affordable. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So what caliber is it? 40?
No, I actually got the 9mm. I thought
okay.
that was popular
so,
because the 40, I like the 42, but it just costs more.
Oh yeah. No. I'm with you. So for that, man, what I would say is shoot the same stuff that you would use in any of your other carry pistols, right? I mean, whatever you go to the range and practice with is that. But if you're going to have it for, self-defense and that kind of stuff, carry the same ammunition, right? Because if nothing else, if the feces hit the circulating oscillator, you can actually take the rounds out of the magazine for the Kel-Tec and shuck them into the magazine for your carry pistol, or vice versa, right? To be
yeah,
able
that's the reason.
to use the rifle capability of the sub 2000 to be able to get you more that more accurate, more stable shot, right?
That's...
So matchy-matchy is good, right? It's like carrying an FN57 and a P90 or the PS90 or, the Kel-Tec 5.7 and an AR-5.7, because the AR-5.7 and the Kel-Tec 5.7 use exactly the same magazine. It's both a 50 round magazine. So I push come to shove, I'll just throw one into my AR and we'll go that way, right? So matchy matchy is a good thing. Looking all spiffy in the same outfits has its place in this day and age.
And that's what I was thinking about too. And like even reloading 9mm, how difficult is that?
It's not.
I'm enjoying this class.
It's not. In fact, I want to set up just a straight up reloading session. We'll probably do it not this upcoming weekend because it's Christmas, but maybe the following weekend we might take a look at it on a Saturday or something. I got to look at the calendar. But I'd like to spend, an hour or two with you guys online, on video, taking you through the setup of the dies, how you check your load, how do you do all that kind of stuff, so that basically you guys are getting a modified, really short metallic cartridge reloading class. I have presented it to the school, and I'm hoping that they will come on board with it. That would be great.
I don't mean to take much more of your time, A-Stop. I got to get back to my family time. I was planning to do this for about an hour, and I definitely appreciate you presenting
sure.
this. And I just want to say, this makes me a lot more confident for what I'm learning. A lot of this is like new to me, and I do better with learning multiple ways instead of just reading a book or just YouTube or Google. So thank you so much for being available to share your knowledge, and you got a lot of knowledge. So thank you so much for your time again.
Hey, Frank, you're welcome. Enjoy your family. Hey, and come into this season of joy, celebrate each and every day. Celebrate
sure.
because there ain't nothing in this world like those we love and the blessings they bring to our lives. Okay.
Thank you for that. Stay blessed out there. Thank you.
So, all right, Frank, well, have a great day. And I'll post this shortly, probably either later this evening or first thing tomorrow. And it will be available so you can come back through and review it if you would like to.
All right. Thank you again. Hey, good meeting you, Lee.
You as well, sir. Have a good one.
All right. Hold on just a second.
Okay.